Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
How big's your team in your office?
Right now, I'm solo right now.
You're solo right now, so it's you and a couple staffers.
Oh, no, it's just me right now.
It's just you. How big are some...
You know, I've been doing this 21 years. Yeah. I mean, I fought grizzly bears. I'm not trying to say
how big.
I kill a grizzly bear, but I'm not going to die without trying.
How big are some of these teams that you're up against? Because I've fought some of these insurance companies, and it blows my mind.
Let me give you an example. Like the case that I'm fixing to try, my father's co-counsel. I'm doing most of the work, but Dad's on the case. And the last big case we tried was in Anderson, South Carolina in 2007. We got a $3 million jury verdict, and it was me and Daddy against two big firms. One's from Atlanta, one's from Greenville. The firm from Greenville, Leatherwood Todd Mann, has been around for 100 and something years, and they've got, I don't know, 12 lawyers, maybe 20 lawyers. The other one was Dennis Corey Porter in Atlanta. You know them. They specialize in trucking cases. They've got who knows how many lawyers, but, you know, it was me and Daddy against them, and we whooped them. We got $1 million. We had the truth on our side. And, you know, I want to go back to what you asked me a minute ago. Being taught by famous lawyers, whatever. The truth is, it depends on who you get taught by.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Our teacher, Jerry Spence, he reinforced what I knew as just a good human being is to love your client. If you can't go into that courtroom truly loving and caring about your client and tell them the truth, you're not going to win.
I've always found that juries have amazingly accurate BS detectors built into the front of their face.
Yep.
And that integrity is really what makes a trial lawyer a trial lawyer. And I see some nodding heads around this table as well. We're going to get to how that works with some of our other guests. But I think that's something that's really important for the world to understand. There are lawyers that you can go out there and just pay, and they're going to send somebody to sit by your side and hold your hand. Trial lawyers get out there, and caring is contagious. If your lawyer cares about your case, cares about your person and your integrity, they're going to do a better job for you regardless of the facts.
That's true. And you have to have the truth on your side. You've heard the term the moral imperative. You have got to have the righteous cause. And I'm going to tell you right now, the older I've gotten, the more I've come to believe in this. If you're going to take 12 people's time that don't know each other and don't want to be there, you better be right. And you better have a cause that's worth bringing them there, forcing them there.
Absolutely. Now, listen, Joe, I want everybody to realize how they can get in touch with you. I also want to emphasize that you may be up in Northeast Georgia, but you go across the state and across the Southeast, right?
Absolutely, I do.
Where are some of the other places that you've tried cases and done casework in Georgia?
Well, in Georgia, I try cases all over the state. I've got cases going on down in Liberty County near Savannah. I've got cases all over Atlanta, Cobb, Gwinnett, down in Richmond County where I'm from, in Augusta. There's no place in Georgia I don't go everywhere.
Let me ask a question. What other types of attorneys actually refer business to you? Do you work with other attorneys?
That's a good question.
If you could list all those.
I'm one of those lawyers that does not advertise. I get cases by word of mouth.
Except for on the radio show.
Well, yeah. I've been on the radio in a long time. But, you know, basically, lawyers that do not do what I do, either younger lawyers who don't have the experience, lawyers who do workers' compensation and don't do torts, because in my line, all I do is cases where I can get to a jury.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal lawyers like Josh, bankruptcy lawyers, domestic lawyers. So I network with lawyers, basically. And
gotcha.
I just treat my clients right, and most of the time they refer me cases.
And Joe's model really is kind of key when you speak to as many lawyers as we do here at Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. You find that there are lawyers that subsist off of marketing and paid advertising and these big pushes. And then you realize there's a whole class of lawyers that don't need to advertise.
Right.
They go by word of mouth and referrals from other legal professionals. And those are, in my opinion, the absolute best clients you'll ever get.
That's true. They are.
You will never get a better client than someone who's already been vetted by another colleague in your field that's going to come to you with a realistic expectation of how a legal relationship works. They're typically going to be much more appreciative of your time as a litigator and also respectful of the process that you're going through. Because what we do is a very intimate act. People don't think about us like a doctor, but really, you're going to tell us the intimate details of your life, and we're the hope for their claim. Whether it's a criminal defense issue or an injury issue, A good litigator, a good trial lawyer is going to go out there and fight for your interests as an individual, and that's what makes a great or legendary lawyer.
That's absolutely true, and I agree. One thing you made me remember was my dad said a long time ago, said, son, you work hard for your clients, that's the best advertising you get. Mm-hmm. They're like talking billboards.
Absolutely.
They are talking billboards. Yeah. I mean, if a client loves you, they're going to tell everybody about you.
Absolutely. Yep. Joe, how does everybody get in touch with you? I just want to make sure we've got some other guests, but yes, we may come back for some roundtable.
I guess I'll give you my phone and my website. My website's www.neal-law.com, and my phone number is 706-829-6229.
Thank you so much for being on the show this morning, and we look forward to hearing from you again very shortly. I'm going to now introduce Lee Biola. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. So Lee Biola represents workers who have been injured on the job before the State Board of Workers' Compensation. I actually did not plan that. No, I'm just kidding. Lee is a former insurance company attorney who now declines offers to represent insurance companies. After graduation from law school, Lee worked for another law firm where he primarily represented insurance companies in workers' compensation cases. Upon opening his own law practice in 2001, Lee changed his focus from representing insurance companies to representing injured workers. Lee is a graduate of Georgia State University College of Law, where he served as co-editor of the legislative history section of the Georgia State University Law Review. He personally handles all of his workers' comp cases. Clients do not deal with paralegals or legal secretaries, but receive individualized attentions directly from an attorney. That's so cool. That's kind of familiar, isn't
it's
it?
It's very similar to Joseph's setup. Absolutely.
Hey, we excel in customer service.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
It absolutely makes your clients appreciate you more. Lee, thanks so much for coming in. And you do something because you practice workers' comp that's really different from what people think about trial lawyers. Will you tell us a little bit about how the workers' compensation process works?
Sure. Joseph fights the big battles. When there's an injury, he's going to the mat for his clients and getting the big settlement and getting all of the past benefits and the future benefits that and damages that his client's entitled to all at once. I, on the other hand, am fighting a bunch of small battles most of the time. Sometimes they're big battles, but most of the time we're fighting small battles. Which doctor are we going to get to? Are they going to cut off my client's benefits before my clients are able to go back to work? My folks are injured workers, people who have worked sometimes decades on the job and are suddenly unable to work because of an injury at work.
Now, tell me exactly what it means for a case to be a workers' compensation case as opposed to a tort or a negligence case or something like that.
Sure, and sometimes they can be both. But a workers' compensation case is one where a person is injured at work. It's pretty much as simple as that. You don't have to be negligent. Your employer doesn't have to be negligent. The only issue is whether you were injured at work. Now, in some cases, for example, in Joseph's case where there was a car accident involved, if that driver had also been, say, a delivery driver or had been doing something for his employer, in addition to the case against the wrongdoer, the tortfeasor in that case, you would also have a workers' compensation claim against the employer just because it happened during work. And the advantage in those situations is that the person can get medical care while they're waiting for resolution of the personal injury claim. There will be an issue later when the personal injury claim is resolved about whether the employer needs to be reimbursed or not. Very often they're not, but it's still something that has to be dealt with.
What are some of the most important considerations when you're going to go out and find a good workers' comp lawyer? I know that it's one of the parts of the legal spectrum where there is a lot of advertising. What are some of the benefits of going with a small local practitioner such as yourself?
Well, a small practitioner is typically going to focus mainly on workers' compensation cases and not other types of law. And that's good because the law does change from year to year depending on what the legislature decides. Whatever the Georgia General Assembly decides is what governs our area of law. It's not a federal area of law unless you're a federal employee. Tell me your question again.
Just trying to figure out.
Early.
It is early. I need a little more coffee.
I'm drinking my Java juice right now. Tell us a little bit more about why it's important to have a A, a specialist lawyer in workers' compensation, and B, what are the advantages of having a smaller skewing law firm as opposed to one of these big behemoths?
Well, typically the big behemoths, as Joseph said, do a lot of advertising. They have a lot of cases, and that means that they have to have an army of paralegals and secretaries to handle the case. And paralegals and secretaries do incredible work, but it's harder for them to keep up with all of the nuances of workers' compensation law because it's constantly changing. You have state statutes and then board regulations that govern things that seem small in one case but can have a huge impact in another case. So if you have a smaller firm where the attorney is looking at every case and where the attorney is handling every case, you get the best information about your case and you can make the best decisions about your case. You're not going through the prism of somebody who may not have the expertise in the law that a lawyer would have.
All right. And as I think what I'm also trying to get at is you're more responsive to your clients because mm-hmm. it's just you.
It's more of a correct. Personal touch. Then.
Correct. And Emily, I have to say that I couldn't do it if I weren't a tenant of Petrie Offices. That is something that's made the way I do my practice possible because you guys answer my phones. You guys mm-hmm. handle the mail. You guys talk to the landlord and deal with the janitorial issues mm-hmm. and just all the things that I would have to yeah. be dealing with if I were
Emily and the janitor are quite tight. You see them together.
It's important.
A whole
That's it.
Lot.
Yeah.
Very good.
I know she knows him on a first name basis.
I mean, it just makes it basically clears the way so that I can focus on.
Right.
The law. And the other thing is that technology has advanced to the point where I'm not as dependent on people as I would have been, say, 15 years ago. I don't have to have a room full of books anymore because the law is basically online now.
Sure.
You know, I don't have to keep up with those kinds of things. There are so many programs out there that facilitate what I do that I can do a lot of things directly without having to depend on as many people. That's not to say that just because a lawyer has a secretary of paralegal that they're not doing a great job. They can, and every model works different for every person. But the situation that I've been able to have with Petrie Offices has allowed me so far to be able to do what I do without hiring anybody
I did
else.
Not pay him.
We thank
Justin Coffee.
Nice advertisement.
Exactly.
I also want to add, you partner with a lot of lawyers like mm-hmm. Joe, when they're dealing with these major catastrophic losses, because oftentimes there's a multifaceted injury. You can have a workers' compensation injury in addition to a negligence action or an intentional tort or something like that. Could you talk a little bit about that process?
Absolutely. You know, anytime there's a big injury where a person is catastrophically injured, you're looking around at all of the different places that the person can possibly recover damages. And sometimes personal injury attorneys are frustrated because they will see this great case. The person has, you know, has some terrible, maybe neck fracture or something like that, and it turns out that the person that's responsible is the employer, and that's terrible because
that's really bad. You can't sue your boss.
You can't sue your boss.
You can't. You got to take what workers' comp gives you.
Right. And workers' comp has.
I've got a case that's an exception to that, but go ahead.
Oh, good. Good. I'd like to hear about that. I'd like to hear about that. And there are a few situations where there are exceptions, but generally you cannot sue your employer, and you cannot sue a coworker. If the coworker is, it might not be your employer's fault. It may be your coworker's fault who did something stupid or maybe even intentionally and harmed you. Irreparably, but all you can do is get the benefits that the Workers' Compensation Act allows. And if you're injured today, the maximum that you could get would be $525 per week, which for some people works out, but for other people, if they were earning a good bit more than that, is a big step down.
Absolutely. That's not going to bring you too far living in Buckhead with a kid in preschool. Not that I
not
know
at all.
At all. And so you don't really have limits regionally with your practice as well. You practice all over the state of Georgia.
That's correct. That's correct.
And it's easy for you to reach out and work in some of these more remote districts, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I talk to most of my clients most of the time by telephone. We usually meet in the beginning to sign the contracts and for me to get a good feel for their case. But after that, we're able to handle everything by telephone and by mail. And many of my clients are on email, so we do it that way. And then if there is a trial that needs to take place over whether the cases arose out of the employment or if there's some other issue that we have to go to trial on, I'll go anywhere in Georgia. The workers' comp judges are stationed around the state, and I'll go anywhere. Most of my cases, though, are in Atlanta, and they take place 2 blocks from my office downtown, so I'm able to walk there easily. And that's also where we have most of our settlement mediation. So when my clients do have a case that goes to trial, they can meet at my office, and assuming they're able to walk, then we walk down to the trial.
And I want to address something that is brought up in my practice extensively, which is how do lawyers get paid? I do a lot of explaining about how contingency billing and how upfront and flat fee and hourly billing works. How does billing, just for our listeners, how does billing for a workers' compensation case work?
Sure. Our fees are regulated by state statute. Workers' compensation attorneys can only get 25% of the income benefits that they get for their clients.
And that's significantly less than you'd find in a lot of contingency contracts, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of contingency contracts involve a third if the case settles before trial, and up to 50% or maybe more if the case goes up on appeal. But in workers' compensation cases, even if we appeal all the way to the state Supreme Court, we are capped at 25% of income benefits. And so that's, just something that we have to take into account.
And that's not something that comes out up front. For your clients, your income is primarily derived from their existing benefits. They don't have to come out of pocket for you at the very beginning of the case, the way that very often we find with some criminal cases or some of the retainer cases. Right.
I cannot charge my clients anything without the approval of the State Board of Workers' Compensation. Every fee that I get has to be approved by the State Board of Workers' Compensation, and I cannot charge it up front. It is only if I get benefits for them that I charge them for anything. So if they come to me and they're already getting their weekly benefit checks and they're coming to me for some other reason, like a need to get a doctor or if they're interested in settling their case, I don't suddenly take 25% of the benefits that they're already getting. I take 25% of whatever I'm able to get for them, which is usually a lump sum settlement.
And I know it's common, at least I believe it's common, people come and retain a workers' compensation attorney oftentimes not right after the incident. Sometimes it's a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about that and why it's important to get a workers' comp attorney involved early?
Well, the main reason to get a workers' comp attorney involved early is to make sure that you're getting the most out of the system that you're able to get, the most that you're entitled to get out of the system. And by that, I mean the best doctor that you can get. That's very important up front, is to get the best doctor that you can possibly get. Oftentimes, employers and insurance companies, and especially the insurance companies, try to limit the doctors that you see. Every employer is required to have, every employer who has 3 or more employees is required to have a list of doctors posted in somewhere on their premises. It might be in the break room. It's supposed to have 6 doctors on it. Very often those doctors are tilted towards the insurance company. They're going to say that somebody's either has nothing wrong with them when they do have something wrong with them, or that they are not as bad off as they actually are. And one of the first things I do is to try to find out is if I can get them off of that panel. If there's some weakness in the panel, for example, if there are only 5 doctors when there's supposed to be 6, then we can pick any doctor we want to in the state and have the employee treat with that doctor. That's the first thing that I do, is to see if that is an option. And even if there's not an automatic way to get them to a better doctor, you can petition the State Board of Workers' Compensation and ask a judge to look at the circumstances and say, this doctor's not working out, we need another doctor. So that's one reason to get a lawyer early, is you can get issues like that dealt with early. But if you don't get a lawyer early and you're getting workers' compensation benefits, you can get a lawyer later. One key thing for both lawyers and injured workers to realize is that the statute of limitations for a workers' compensation claim is 1 year from the date of injury, not 2 years from the date of injury.
And that's one of the shortest statute of limitations on the books. I know there's a couple 6-month anti-litem notices, but 1 year is extraordinarily short in the legal grand scheme of things.
Right. So if you're a personal injury attorney and you have a case that against a third party who is negligent, but there's also this was also happening as part of the job, you don't want to wait for the two-year statute of limitations on the personal injury claim to run. You want to get the case filed before the 1 year runs.
And I believe, and I might get some nodding heads here, I think I read somewhere that it is malpractice for a lawyer to keep it as a personal injury and miss that 1 year workers' comp statute of limitations. So there's a pro tip out there for you personal injury guys. You can't let these things linger. One of the biggest sources of complaints that the state bar tells me about are lawyers that are non-responsive and not keeping their clients in mind when they have these statute of limitations. When you've got competing statute of limitations, you got to make sure you satisfy both of them. That can cost your client a huge amount of money and subject you to professional malpractice claims.
And I've been called as a witness in cases like that where the personal injury attorney...
Lee, I want to make sure we get to the rest of our guests before our roundtable at the end. How are people going to get in touch with you when they have a workers' compensation claim?
They can reach me at my phone number at 404-758-5300. And if you'd like to check out a little bit more information about my office, my website is www.workers-compensation-atlanta.com. That's dashes, not underscores, between workers' compensation and Atlanta.
Thank you so much. And we're very happy to have you as a longtime client.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
This is great.
And next we have Barbara Moon. Thank you for being so patient.
This is going to be exciting.
I hope so.
Nitty-gritty.
Oh, it will. It will.
I didn't get up at 5 in the morning for it not to be exciting.
We're going to do an off-the-air session of this interview as well where we can name names. No.
I'd love to.
Ms. Moon has obtained her law degree from Georgia State University College of Law in 1988. Subsequently, in 1989, she was admitted to the District of Columbia, the U.S. District Court, the Northern and Middle Districts of Georgia, the U.S. Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit, the Georgia Court of Appeals, and the Georgia Supreme Court. On motion by former Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court, Charles Longstreet Weltner, she was admitted to the Supreme Court of the United States of America on July 17, 1992. She was a former part-time magistrate judge in Clayton County. She has also served on faculty of the William Daniels Trial Advocacy Program and lectured at various seminars and trial lawyers workshops at the University of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association. And she's had tons of high-profile cases here.
I was going to say.
I couldn't list them all.
She has worked with a who's who of Georgia's biggest and best legal minds, especially on the criminal. Barbara, I really want to thank you for coming by the show today. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us what you're doing now. You know, I see here, you've worked with Lee Sexton. You've worked with Steve Sadow. You've worked with Bruce Harvey. You've been involved in some of these major, major, newsworthy, nationally covered cases. What are you doing now?
Well, it's not as exciting as it used to be, because when you start out with attorneys like Steve Sadow and Bruce Harvey, it's kind of hard at that afterwards to find anyone that even remotely is to their standard. I started out, I was fortunate enough when I began practicing that I met Steve in a courtroom, actually, in a federal court, and my client was testifying against his client, and it was my first introduction to Steve. And needless to say, it went south from there.
He's quite a powerhouse with the verbal confrontations.
Yes, he is, and he's taught me well. I call him and Bruce Harvey my tormentors. They have, putting it lightly, they've been my tormentors for about a little over 20 years, and close to probably 25 as friends. And I'm still doing things with them to this day. Bruce and I just had a case in Henry County a couple of months ago. It was a bench trial, and we did well. And then Steve actually associated me on a case, a federal case, it was back in April. And, of course, he's always lead counsel. I'm just sitting second chair and do what he tells me to do, basically.
Hey, you got to keep the right guy on the letterhead every once in a while. He's out there in the press constantly. I know that's a big chunk of his practice. Needs some brains behind it, though, I guess.
Well, he's the brains, but...
He's a smart guy.
He's an intelligent guy. And him and Bruce are probably the best two things in my career as far as, you know, keeping me on the right path and making me very tough, actually.
Absolutely.
When I've tried cases with them, I mean, there's just no room for error.
Well, one of the nice things about working on such high-profile cases is it's the ring when you're talking with the prosecution. These are not cases where everybody's going to make nice and sing kumbaya. These are cases where y'all are going to get down and fight about big issues, because you're not talking about a weekend in jail here, a weekend in jail there. You practice extensively in state. You practice extensively in federal court. Your clients, if they get convicted, go to prison for a long time.
Yes, and I don't do as much in federal anymore. I was honored enough to do that with Steve, but it ended up in a plea. But he did a fabulous job, and I was honored that he called me on that case. But the problem with the cases I have is so much pressure and stress, because there's no room for error. You make one mistake, your client can go to jail the rest of his or her life.
Can you tell me what you focus on, like what types of practice? What is the focus of your practice now? Okay.
My passion is criminal law. Okay. And like the others were saying, I feel like it's got to be in your heart.
Yes.
And I feel blessed to be in this profession. Mm-hmm. I feel blessed to have met people like Steve Seddow and Bruce Harvey, who've just been an incredible source in my life as far as a mentor/tormentor. And so I've done more of a tormentor.
That's a
actually
pretty poetic phrase. Yeah.
So, but I focus on, I do a lot of cases as far as like drug cases.
Okay.
But I have done homicide cases. One of the cases I was thinking about when you were talking about humanizing your client was my first homicide case in Clayton County several years ago, representing a lady who was charged with killing her husband, who was a police officer.
Ooh.
And her daughter was somewhat involved as far as disposing of the body. So it was pretty traumatizing. But so she had a lot of negativity from the press and so forth.
I would say so.
Yeah, so I was trying to humanize her, doing some pretrial hearings, and I kept putting my hand on her, and, you know, the media was there, you know. But I really did like her. I had gotten to know her very well. And so I was trying to humanize her, so the prosecutor made a motion for me to not touch my client. So she said I was playing on the sympathy of the media. And I happened to like her. So we went toe-to-toe.
Lord forbid you actually care about your client every once in a while.
She said that I was just playing to the media. So
had
emotion.
She was too when she did that.
Yes, we had. And so she had it because the police officer was the victim. She had like two rows of police officers on the front two rows. Yeah. So I made a motion to have the police officers stay outside, because I said, well, they're playing on the media.
That's way worse than what you did.
So we went back and forth, but we ended up, you know, with a good result on it. But I've done other cases as far as like armed robbery, sexual offense cases, burglaries. I do a lot of parole, but primarily I'm doing a lot of drug cases. And the drug cases I take all my cases very personally and want a great result. Because they're all looking at jail sentences and losing their freedom. But the drug cases I take really personal, because these are people that in most chances you can save. So if you get them on the right path, I start talking to the district attorney or the solicitor about rehabilitation versus punishment, because I don't think with the nation's problem that we have with drugs today that punishment's the answer. I think we've got to get them into a rehab. We've got to get them on the right path. You can't save everybody, but you can save many of them who want to get help.
Mm-hmm.
And recently I just had a case where the young man was locked up for a new offense when he was on probation for possession with intent in a county that we're familiar with. And he was not set a bond, and we didn't want him to have a bond because he'd go back to his old habits. So immediately got in touch with a great rehab center in North Georgia and got him accepted basically on the phone. And so the prosecutor was then willing to hold the case, because if he had not held the case, the new offense, the probation officer in Cobb County was going to issue a warrant for a probation revocation. So it was very critical and time sensitive that we were able to get him in the program.
And let me ask you this, because you said you do get a lot of slack for being a criminal attorney. Yes. What are some good things that people have said about you or to you about your practice?
Well, there's not a lot, but there's you know, I get that look. In fact, I'll just go
How
into...
How do you defend those guilty people?
Listen, it was right on my nose.
I did that a few times back in the day.
I travel with a study group, a pretty prestigious university. And we always go around the table like we're doing here. What do you do? What do you do? And of course, they're all professors and academicians, you know, at great colleges, universities. And so I got that this summer when we were on a trip in Italy. And they were, well, what do you do? And I smiled, you know, and I said, oh, criminal defense attorney. And you just saw, they all looked like they had a bag of lemons. You know, they just said, oh, how do you represent those people?
But they all take your card.
Yes. And I said to them, you know, one of those people one day could be you, your loved one, or family members. And then you're going to need a criminal defense attorney like myself. So that kind of stopped that conversation with silence. But some of the good things I've heard, there was a homicide case, one of my first ones several years ago, and the young man was 16, 17 years of age.
Oh, wow.
And he was accused of killing his stepfather execution style. And so when Goodness. They came to me, it was very traumatizing. I think I'd been out like a year, so I was totally traumatized myself. And so I was able to get a very low bond for him. And so the DA did not have enough evidence to bind it over, so he just stayed out on bond. So I got a phone call from him actually this year.
Oh, wow.
And he called and he said, I don't know if you remember me. And unfortunately, I didn't, because this has been several years ago, clients ago. And he said, I just want you to know, every time one of my children graduate, or I have, you know, had a child has been born, or at the Christmas holidays, I can be with my family, I think of you. I've been wanting to call you for a long time, and it kept I kept forgetting. And he said, but you have made a big part of my life, and thank you for giving me my life and the life with my children.
Nobody ever hears that.
And that's why I can tell you I remember that. And I have a client that also in a homicide case that Wade Crumley and I tried. It's been about 3 years ago or so. No, it's been about 8 years ago, and it was on Forensic Files. And we got a not guilty on that case, and her mother was dying while she was going through trial. So she was concerned she'd never see her mother alive.
Oh, wow.
So she sends me Christmas cards every year, you know, thanking me for the time that she has with her mother.
It's amazing when I gather with lawyers and talk about the kind of extracurricular benefits of practice. And those personal relationships really, there's not very many other things you can do for a living where someone turns around year after year and comes back and thanks you for the direct impact you made on their life. I don't know, rather than medicine and maybe psychology, it's amazing to have these people come back and thank you for the impact you made. And that's something you just carry around forever and ever. Mm-hmm. It really feels good as a practitioner to have made that impact.
Yes, it's very rewarding. I said one of the depressing parts of my job is when I go to the prisons, you know, Reidsville, you know, where they're there for life, they're lifers. And one of the most frightening times I had going to the prison is when they had me walk in population. Mm-hmm. And when you're walking in population and you see a whole row of nothing but lifers, you're like, whoa. And so, you know, at that moment I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to go see my client today or not. And the deputy turned around, he had this huge gun, and he said, do you want to see him or not? I said, yes. And so I thought, you know, I just hope that he's right about my security. But if he's not, I'm here to see the client. I'm not going to disappoint him. I'm driven a long distance to South Georgia, and I'm here on his behalf. Mm-hmm. And so the prisons depress me, but actually they give me strength to continue the fight because nothing's worse when you leave the big prisons with a big barbed wire fence and you hear all the doors clang and clang and clang, and you walk out and you're just like so thankful that you have your freedom, and it makes you work harder for those clients to try to get their freedom.
I always love checking the kind of mental temperature of clients when it's one of my executives or someone like that, their first time getting locked up. Yeah. If you're some regular Joe or Jane and you go down to Rice Street or County Farm Road, it's shocking.
Yes.
The first time you're in cuffs, the first time those doors close behind you, that is a life-changing event, especially if you think of yourself as being a regular person, never been through this process.
Yes.
It really is shocking. I want to touch on something real quickly before we move on to our last guest and then an open roundtable. Talk to me a little bit about how you feel, Governor, is dealing with these new drug laws. I know that we've been fighting mandatory minimums for a long time, and now the governor's actually coming out and changing some of these criminal mandatory minimum laws and bringing out accountability courts. That's going to impact your drug practice, right?
Yes, it will. And one of the things I was going to say earlier, one of the things that I find that's very helpful to tell new attorneys that are coming out of law school and so forth is to work your know your judges, your attorneys, the prosecutors, and so forth, where you can work with them in the beginning and get them focused on what, you know, is best for the client, because they know the jails are overcrowded. They're getting all types of calls from the sheriffs, get them out of here, we can't move them fast enough. But then you've got the parole board, you know, who's focused basically on violent crimes. So you really need to, the drug cases will make a difference from what's going happening here. And if we can get most of them in a rehab center, it's going to be better for everyone.
And it really is the personal touch of your lawyer putting a lot of time into your case that gets it changed from a trafficking with a 10-year mandatory Absolutely. Minimum down to a possession with intent, which is a straight probation crime. And that, from a criminal defense perspective, that's a huge win. Getting off that 10-year mandatory minimum is a big deal.
It is huge. And one of the things that I try to approach the district attorneys with are these pretrial programs, because they're huge. That I had a case recently where the young man was charged with several painkillers, and that's huge right now. These painkillers, mm-hmm. they're the most addictive drug, and yes. we're having a lot of problems with those. And these young men and women don't realize when they put a handful of pills in their purse or whatever pocket, and they're not in a prescription bottle, a lot of them have taken it from home from their parents. And they get addicted, and then it goes from there, the robberies, the burglaries, because then they have to support their habit. And then at that point, it's almost they're so far gone to get any treatment that then they continue the life of crime to support that habit. Mm-hmm. And so the pretrial diversion centers I've been able to get them in, this young man, he was looking at an intent to distribute, because the pills were individual in the container, and because they were not prescription bottle, there were several of them, I think 60 or 70. So I went to the – yeah, it wasn't just like he was taking –
Well, for $3, there's a CVS down the street, and they're the biggest drug pushers in the world.
Right. Yeah, right. So he was obviously taking them more for than the pain. But so I was able to get him into a pretrial diversion, so he went from a possession with intent to distribute to basically I got the case dismissed because he completed the program.
That's fantastic.
And tell me, you obviously get a lot of referrals for your business. What other attorneys, what other practices, what other professions refer you business?
Well, like the others said, a lot is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And I don't do a lot of advertising. If you look for name, all you see is, you know, just a small space in the yellow pages and my website, BarbaraMoonLaw.com. I haven't had to, fortunately, because when I started out practicing with people like Bruce and Steve, you know, that word travels. And because, sure. you know, I've basically practiced with them on different cases, when people have known that I've tried cases with them or they can't afford either one of them, they come to me because they feel like they're getting someone that they can trust because of working with those two.
Fantastic.
And so, yes, and so I've even got referrals like from a judge, not many, mm-hmm, and prosecutors, mm-hmm. surprisingly enough, and a lot of times even from my adversaries. Sure. It's odd.
That's crazy.
And you see bailiffs in the courtroom who watch mm-hmm. you, and they're like, she's a fighter. So they will send me to their family members, and then other family members that you do well and will send you to other. And it's a domino effect. So mm-hmm. I've really been blessed to get all my referrals from either attorneys like Steve or Bruce. In fact, Steve just sent me one Friday, and I got to call and thank him if he's not listening.
Don't well, you love it when the bailiffs love you?
Yes.
About as good as it gets. That's because awesome. They basically run the courtroom.
They run the courtroom. Right, they see all the cases coming in all day. So when they give you the heads up, hey, I'm glad you're here today, it's going to be a real fight, you know you're doing your job.
And they know which lawyer are good and what you aren't.
Right.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back soon, and let our listeners know how they can reach you for sure.
Okay. It's BGM, as in Barbara G. Moon, 2000 at bellsouth.net. My office number is 678-583-9205. And thank you for having me, and I'd love to come back at any time.
Absolutely. We're so glad we had you guys. And this is just such a great show so far. I'm like, so excited. Anyway, so we have Lee Ann Bell, and she's been so sweet and great audience, too. Just
and
laughing
finally
away.
Not a lawyer.
She has made her career working with attorneys. She has in-depth experience with first-year associates, as well as partners with millions of dollars in business. An article entitled Dialing for Dollars, published in 1983 in The American Lawyer, changed her life. It was about the emergence of recruiters working solely with attorneys. There were only 13 legal recruiters scattered throughout the United States. No legal recruiters were in Atlanta, and there were virtually none in the Southeast. Few Southern law firms had used recruiters, and every one of the managing partners she met told her that her business concept would never work. It took 6 months to make the first placement, but then the phone started ringing with clients interested in the company's services. Leanne has had a number of articles published in local and national publications. She is now in the final stages of writing her first book. She is knowledgeable and her approach is authentic, straightforward, and fun. She is an entertaining speaker who clearly makes her points while keeping her audience's attention. Thank you so much. We're so glad to have you on the show today.
Well,
you've been
so
such a great listener so far. We want to highlight you for sure.
Well, I've loved listening to everybody. And the thing I like the most is that you all love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I sat for 30 plus years as a legal recruiter listening to people who hated their jobs. So if you don't love your job, you should kick it to the curb.
Exactly.
You really should.
It sounds
caring
like all
is
these...
contagious. It absolutely is.
Yeah. It absolutely is. And if you're miserable, get out of it. And that is a little bit of what I've done. After 30 years of placing lawyers, and I still do place some well-qualified attorneys, I looked at my computer and I thought, I just can't do this anymore. And
I'm waiting for that day. Where are my flip-flops?
I've had it. And I thought, my children, I have adult children, are doing what they love. Why am I not doing what I love? And what I love is writing and speaking. Mm-hmm. And those are both easy for me. So I started writing my book, Twisted Business, which will come out in the first of the year, which is a guide for lawyers through the briar patch. And it's an interesting book because it's not your typical how-to book. It's more of a story. And I'm very creative. And what I've done is, and this is very interesting. What I've done is, let's say I have written a chapter about risk-taking. And then I'll follow it up with interviews from attorneys who have taken risks.
I'm willing to bet you have war stories upon war stories. After 30 years from starting recruiting in Atlanta, you must have seen pretty much the backside of every room in the high rises downtown.
The tell-all book's coming last.
There you go.
I'll move to the Cayman Islands.
Names may not have been changed.
Names and sexual, will be changed. And in fact, I have in my book a whole list of cautionary tales. And it doesn't have anybody's name on it, but I can go from anything from a guy in a pink tutu with a mustache
I might resemble that.
to 3 former clients I have who are in federal prison.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot that I know, but there's also a lot I can teach and do it in a creative way.
Can you give us a little bit of a snapshot of some of these stories that you're telling in the book? I don't want to give away the plot and everything else, but we need some teaser for what we're going to get.
Well, for instance, people have been very open with me, and nobody that I asked to be in the book said no.
Wow.
And I've got people like Randy Evans from McKenna Long, who told me stuff that I kept saying, can I write that? And he just go, yeah.
He speaks to a lot of quotable people these days with his practice.
Well,
for those
does.
Of you that don't know, he is probably one of the heaviest hitters in the Southeast. He has the direct red phone to everybody in the Republican Party. He is dialed
in. And some of the Democrats.
And some of the Democrats.
He has met many presidents. But I knew Randy when he was a second-year attorney.
Wow.
And nobody thought he'd make it.
He has a true Georgia legend, and not many people are positioned better than him for pulling levers in the state.
Well, trust me, I was at an event where when he walked out, they all said he'll never make it. And
hey, we have all been there.
Yeah, haven't we all been there?
Well, tell me a little bit more of the theme of the book and how it helps attorneys.
The theme of the book is to guide attorneys through the typical things they're going to face. And then give them examples of how people have faced those. And it's more of a story than it is a book of how to. And the theme runs through everything you would expect, from risk taking to how to build business to, and the guys at the top, and they're not always guys, I've got a lot of women in there, to, it's called Twisted Business because life doesn't go in a straight line. Life has bumps and twists and turns, and you have to know how to survive those. And that's what it kind of does, is teach you to survive those and teach you never to give up.
teaching via a parable very much. So.
Very much so.
So people can relate in all levels.
Right. And it's not so long that you'll get bored with it.
What are some of the key takeaways people are going to get from reading these very personal and intimate stories?
Never give up. Patience is imperative. One of my, Jane Jordan from Emory, who is one of their general counsels, her mantra, I got everybody's mantra, and her mantra was, life is a banquet, and a lot of poor fools are starving. Mm. And it was interesting what people, I also did coloring outside the lines with a firm that just sat down and took a piece of paper and said, what do we want our firm to look like? And they drew it up. I mean, it started out with two people. They now have 140.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just, I think you need a client-based business. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can have a partner-based business. And I think a lot of the happiest people are those that are in smaller firms where they can decide how they're going to charge. And I truly believe that, and it's just not very popular to say, but that many of the clients will go to the smaller firms for most of what they need done day to day. But when their butt is on the line, mm-hmm. they're going to go to a big firm so they can say, we used a big firm.
I think you're really reflecting a lot on how the legal business has changed, especially over the last 10 or 15 years. I'm seeing a lot of my colleagues going into a boutique mm-hmm. in order to customized billing in their own individual practice, but then very much so when it's the mega case, when it's the big deal, you're
right.
going to those big firms mm-hmm. that have multiple locations across the Southeast or a nationwide exposure.
Or internationally.
And they have these footprint that are just giant. Now, you're not going to get the same personalized service at some of these big firms, but at the same time, their resource level is immense.
It is.
There's
a reason they're there. And I've met attorneys all over the world. I was in India a year ago. And this was funny because I've learned to say, this is a good business practice. It's nice to see you, not it's nice to meet you. Because of after 30 years, people change. Sure. And I may have met them 30 years ago. But I was in India at Coca-Cola India. And one of the men, Indian men walked in and said, Leanne, what are you doing here? To this day, I don't know who he is. But it's interesting who you get to know. And you're absolutely right. The practice of law has changed dramatically in the last 30 years mm-hmm. from kind of a fraternity sense to a service business. Mm-hmm. And anybody that doesn't understand that it's a service business is going to be in real trouble.
Emily just had an article coming out about billing by the bucket and some mm-hmm. of these alternative billing. I know that I don't do corporate clients, but I network with a lot of them. That's been a really big issue mm-hmm. these days. I know we've talked about the book a little bit. Now, you do still take a few private clients for placement?
I do, and I also do career counseling. Mm-hmm. I'm very good at prepping for interviews. You can't go into an interview, and the first question they're going to ask is, tell me about yourself. Well, you need to be able to work that. And you need to be in charge of the interview. And so mm-hmm. I do a lot of that.
And that's not just for entry-level walk-in first-year law students. That's for people in mid-career. That's even for people at the high end of their career if they're
Absolutely.
Doing a lateral or something like that. I know there's a lot of trading these partners mm-hmm. between the big firms. That's a service that really comes in handy when there's millions of dollars on the line.
Absolutely. And I do more partners. Then I don't do first-year associates. That just doesn't work very well. But I do mid-level associates, and I do partners with millions of dollars of business because often they haven't interviewed in forever.
I can imagine needing to dust off that banker gray suit every once in a while.
Yeah.
And say, I got to go actually put on something nice and do
and be a nice person.
Are you saying?
Hey, I'm not saying there's one suit locked up in the corner of my closet that only makes it out on a rare
right.
occasion. Y'all might have one of those. How do people get in touch with you and tell us just a little bit more about what kind of services you offer?
They can get in touch with me very easily. My phone number's everywhere. And my last name is Bellon. B as in boy, E-L-L-O-N. So my website is the Bellon Firm, And my LinkedIn, which I think it, I would love for all of you to join, is Leanne Bellin at LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn has really done a great job with allowing networking specifically among colleagues. And I like it more than Facebook and some of these
time.
Others because there's that business legitimacy. If I link with you, I know some of the other people you're linked with, not mm-hmm. just on a casual, hey, that's a guy that I went to a show with,
right.
but on a, wow, that's somebody in my legal community. I know what they're going for. I know where they're coming from.
Right.
They're vetted.
And I've made contact with people out of the city that way. And I've placed people all over the world. So I've traveled
all over
the world.
Social media is wonderful, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's helping us make money all over the world.
Yeah, it's now I'm having big fun.
That's fantastic.
Great.
That's what your career is for. I'm a big believer that people that have fun and have passion for what they're doing for their job, I think we've expressed that today, you get better results that way.
Every single person has said that, and I'm so impressed.
If you're going out there and really caring about your client and caring about the integrity of your process, you're going to get a better result. And if you take five lawyers, find the one that cares.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to work harder, provide more investment of their time and emotion on your personal legal issue. And this is an intimate business. This is something where you're sharing a tremendous amount with a professional. You're going to be a happier lawyer and a happier client if you become more involved.
Well, and also, if you don't care what people think about you. And for instance, Steve Liebel, who has moved his practice to North Georgia, is a character. Yeah. And he's in my book. But you know what? He doesn't even think about taking a risk.
Nope.
He just jumps. Hmm. And fortunately, he has a very supportive wife.
Emily, I can't believe it, but we are closing in on the end of this hour.
Yes.
I know you want to do a quick wrap-up, talk about how people get in touch with everybody here. Is there anything else that we've missed? I know it's been a kind of whirlwind.
It's been awesome, though. The theme has been great. It was not planned, but it seems like it was, you know.
It really has come together. It always blows me away. You get such good guests down here. People say, Josh, why do you come down there and do this? I meet people every time I get to do this show, and that increases my network and increases the type of response mm-hmm. and benefits for my clients.
Well, I'll talk a little bit about Atlanta Legal Experts and kind of what Josh was just saying. Basically, that's what's happened after every show where people will end the show and the attorney will say, well, I have a case for you. I have a case for you. And so people are making money off this show, which is great. And it's not even before they use it for their social media and stuff. And speaking of social media, we actually have a new Atlanta Legal Experts LinkedIn group.
Wow.
So if you connect with me.
I already have.
Yes, you have. And
I've
actually
joined it this
morning. Awesome. Thank you so much. We're going to have a lot more benefits coming up in the new year for you guys. Not just the show, but a lot of other networking for attorneys, strategically placed networking events so that you don't just come and have a drink and have a good time and just kind of hope that you met the right person. You're actually placed in front of the right person. And so a lot of people here have referrals that they mm-hmm. depend on from these other professions and other attorneys. And so that's what we're going to do on purpose for you guys. So we're just so happy that people are making money and, you know, what goes around comes around. So I guess I'll wrap up with that, Emily Rowell with Peachtree Offices. Thank you, Josh Schiffer with Chanko Schiffer. Oh, and Josh, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
You guys can always call me at 404-842-0909 or www.chanko, C-H-A-N-C-O, Schiffer, S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R. com. We're located right here in the heart of Buckhead. And I'll tell you, a big part of my business comes from these specific networking opportunities. Mm-hmm. While we're a great lawyer for a lot of cases, very often my best job is getting you with the right lawyer. If it's not a circuit where I go all the time, or if it's a specific legal issue where we need to bring in a heavy hitter, that's the benefit of networking. And if you're serving your client well, you're going to get more clients. You're going to get a better reputation. You're going to do better. I want to thank you, Emily. I want to thank all of our guests here.
Yes, absolutely.
Please, social media, Atlanta Legal Experts Radio. We're here. We're here for you. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. You made the show great.